Rebecca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, and Vesta Godarz, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Crook-Meadows, Carlo De Jesus, and Phil Raymond. Our website is democracynow.org. You can go there and you can send us pictures and videos as we celebrate our 18th birthday. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Pat 154 from Allen Park. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today, for the first half hour, we're going to do a rebroadcast of our live broadcast of Dearborn's State of the City Address from this last Wednesday night, the 26th. It begins with a special tribute video, and that's what you're going to be hearing, the soundtrack from the video for Nancy Hubbard.
Councilwoman Nancy Hubbard was first elected to the Dearborn City Council in 1989 and has served six consecutive terms. She is a lifetime Dearborn resident who takes her position on the council very seriously, a fact that is obvious when you look at how involved she is with community events and her hands-on approach to helping residents.
I attend as many social functions as I can. It's part of my job, and I don't hold down an outside job besides the council. So therefore, I can devote the majority of my time to the City Council. I spend the majority of my time at City Hall. I answer phone calls, I write letters. I see citizens when they come in. I go out on residential problems.
Nancy not only spends her time at City Hall, every chance she gets, she is out in the community volunteering for numerous nonprofit organizations. During her years serving on the council, Nancy has been an advocate for senior citizens. Nancy devoted a lot of time working with city commissions, including the City Beautiful Commission and the Commission on Disability Concerns. During her time in office, Nancy was committed to making sure Dearborn's facilities and services were top-notch. Being the daughter of former Dearborn Mayor Orville Hubbard gave her a chance to learn at an early age what her priorities should be as an elected official.
I just try to do the best I can. I try to do things that I know that he would approve of and that he would do. That's helping people, helping others.
During her time on City Council, Nancy has played an important role in helping move Dearborn forward. And she has been a part of many important development projects that have made Dearborn the vibrant community it is today. Everyone from the city administration, your colleagues, all of the many city employees, and the residents of Dearborn want to thank you for your years of service and wish you health and happiness in your future endeavors.
Good evening. Nice to be back. Kind of missed you guys. Anyway, I'm going to say a few words tonight, and I want to thank Mayor O'Reilly for escorting me up here. I have a little problem with my sciatic, and if you know what that is, well, it's not pleasant. Well, anyway, here we go. When I first started in politics, I didn't have the fancy degrees or formal education that some of my running mates had. I had something better. A lifetime of watching public service provided the Hubbard way. I knew there was no better background than learning the art of serving people from Orville Hubbard, who lifted this concept to heights never seen before. My dad knew what people wanted, and more importantly, he knew how to give them what they wanted. That's why the standards of excellence he set still remains something to strive for, even today. Since I wasn't serving people from the administrative side, I knew my role would be somewhat different than his. However, it still relied on the same simple but powerful basics. Treat people with respect by listening to their issues. Always tell them the truth and do your best to help them. I found that if you did these three steps right, whether you were actually able to help people became less important to them. I've remained true to this approach my whole career as an elected official in Dearborn. You can ask the thousands of people who sought my help along the way, and each one will tell you the same thing. Nancy took the time to listen to my problem. She told me what she would try to do, and then she did all she could to help me. I am proud of that legacy because for me, that's what politics is really all about. Helping people with problems they couldn't solve themselves. Of course, there were also a lot of exciting projects and programs I was a part of throughout my career that have added so much to this community. We improved nearly every facility my father built, expanded others, and added new amenities that our residents have quickly embraced. And Dearborn will remain a very special place for those who visit, those who work here, and especially for those of us lucky enough to call it home. Thank you for your support all of these years and for the opportunity to serve you. It's been an honor and a pleasure. God bless Dearborn. God bless the United States of America. Good night.
We have, we have one more presentation. I think that the representative of the Congressman John Dingell is here and is going to present something. If we could, please.
Nancy, John really wanted to be here, and he loves you, and you've been friends a long time. So he was here the night we inaugurated the mayor, which was a great night, and we're in the new city council. So first of all, we have for you a pin who's designed by Ann Hand, who's one of the prominent jewelry designers in Washington, and it's known as the Liberty Eagle, which you've seen on Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright. This is yours.
Thank you very much. So
And then he also has a congressional record insert, which is history forever, praising you for all that you've done. We love you. You and John Dingell are going to be part of Dearborn forever. Thank you for all you've done. I'm going to start to cry. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
We just celebrated Nancy's 24 years of service. And in that spirit, before I begin my formal remarks, I want to take this opportunity to praise the stellar work of our employees, particularly our DPW crews, our emergency personnel, and our communications people, and all those involved in helping us safely weather the terrible winter that we've had this year. This has been a true test of their commitment to providing superior service, and in my opinion, they passed the test with flying colors. So I want to thank all of them for their hard work and dedication. In kind of a twisted fate, by removing the snow from our roads, the DPW crews have uncovered an extraordinary number of potholes that have been, I hope you've all been avoiding. But I just want to let you know, when they're not plowing, they've been filling these potholes, even on overtime at times, putting down 50 pounds of cold patch every week. Spring cannot come soon enough. But now on to the matter at hand. We've improved the state of our city last year, despite the ongoing financial challenges. Some of the highlights from these efforts include serious crime continued to fall by 9.5% in 2003. That's a total of 30% since 2008. I have some of the members of our force over here, and I think we should acknowledge. We've also completed the successful merger with the Melvindale Fire Department, saving money and enhancing the depth and timeliness of our emergency response. And we have some representatives of our fire department here. And we've stayed on track with our neighborhood stabilization program, adding Habitat for Humanity homes to refresh our mature residential areas. We've increased our use of technology by making building inspection reports available online, providing more convenient payment methods and options for you, and by automating job applications and other paperwork. We've added a spray park to features at Dunworth Pool and made plans for a new splash pad at Hemlock, which will go in this summer. We've added popular new events at Camp Dearborn and took over operations at the Mystic Creek Golf Course. We've started initiatives to reduce trash and vehicle issues in our neighborhoods and completed a crucial construction phase of our sewer separation project, bringing affected areas new roads, water mains, and sidewalks. We were named once again as a five-star community for economic development by the University of Michigan iLabs project. We have more details about these and other impressive accomplishments in a comprehensive handout you can read at your leisure. If you didn't pick it up on the way in, please pick it up on the way out. Because that's all I really want to say about last year. Because tonight, rather than looking back at our success in 2013, I want to spend this time looking forward to where our future lies. I want to lay some important groundwork so that we can move together into the future with a shared understanding of our challenges and of our opportunities. What I really want to talk about is how we determine our vision for the Dearborn of the future and how we make that vision a reality. Let's talk about vision and its actual value in making decisions today. Well, no one can know the future for certain, but thoughtfully evaluating relevant and available information now and combining this with trend analysis will allow us to focus our efforts and resources in ways that are most likely to produce positive outcomes. The result of visioning becomes a reference point for decision-making going forward. It does not predetermine how current or future decision-makers will allocate resources or invest in the community, but it ensures that those decisions are well-informed and focused toward realistic goals. We can't just grope in the dark when making cuts or seeking new revenues or directing new investments and hope in the end that we'll get a favorable result. We need to define where we want to go, then see what trade-offs can be made to get us as close as possible to our vision. The process starts with an analysis of our current assets, liabilities, challenges, and opportunities. Now, this needs to be a frank appraisal that is realistic and comprehensive. If we're going to be successful, we must accept the current reality of our liabilities and challenges, even though we may wish they weren't there. Our bottom line mission is to keep Dearborn a desirable place where people choose to live. By taking steps to keep an updated, modern environment, a center of commerce where businesses choose to invest, and a city that has a high quality of life because of our amenities, special events, and unique features. A city that still offers outstanding value with sustainable services that support the greater good of the community. Now, accomplishing this means determining both short and long-term actions. We need to reject government's common practice of budgeting 1 year at a time. Now, we've already done that, but there's a lot more we have to do. It means taking a hard look at our finances and engaging in some difficult choices as we establish the best service mix, the best investments to make for the long term, and the best actions for the majority of our residents. We need to deal with facts and figures. But tonight, I really want to get you in the mindset of thinking about transformation. Not just how we keep Dearborn a comfortable place today, not just how we pay our bills today, not just how we maintain what we've always done in the ways we've always done it, but also how we think about our community, how we think about transforming our community. We want to preserve our traditions and our stellar reputation while also exploring new ways of thinking about how our city can remain special. The truth is that if we want to remain special, we will have to embrace change. Now, our first challenge in this transformation is like so many things, money. Now, this is true in your own households, and it's true here at the city. We have a defined pool of money, just like you have at home. And like you, we have to decide what to spend on essentials and on nice-to-haves, as well as set aside funds for the long-term goals and for unexpected events. If those decisions about how to allocate the funds that require the most effort for you at home and for us at the city. The city has four main categories through which we kind of use our general funds: public safety, Department of Public Works, recreation and culture, and general government. Now, even now they're being supplemented through the temporary millage that was approved by voters in 2011 and will expire in June 2017. Without replacing that revenue, we face hard decisions in our general fund services. Do we cut back on snow plowing, police equipment, athletic programs, do without critical technology, further reduce staff that provide essential support to our frontline departments, close a facility, defer needed maintenance, some of the above, all of the above? At what point do we no longer offer the quality of life that our residents want and deserve? For years, we've been extremely successful in reducing the costs of providing services, and we've done so strategically in ways that have minimized its impact on you. Our non-public safety operations have experienced staffing reductions of 25 to 35%. It's our new normal of our departments and employees. By virtue of all the changes made in these areas, we estimate that we are saving $18 million a year every year from what we spent before. If we had not been proactive and made these difficult changes year after year, we would be in a much different circumstance now, and especially when a temporary millage sunsets. So I'm proud of the responsible and strategic discipline we've shown, and thankful for the progress we've made with our support from our employees, from our unions, and particularly from our city council. We're certainly not done seeking additional cost reductions. Lowering our overhead is a constant focus. It's one of the main reasons why we're relocating our offices to the Dearborn Administrative Center. Simply put, we'll save hundreds of thousands of dollars every year going forward. And that preserves tax dollars then that will go back into services for you. On top of that, we will offer a much better and more convenient customer experience. But saving money represents only half of our resource formula. We could also seek revenue in ways that we haven't been tried yet. You may never have gotten this much thought, given this much thought, but how can we as a community look at transforming some of our liabilities into assets? For instance, are there ways to convert old industrial sites to become attractive for newer technologies and so bring in greater property tax dollars and economic activity? Can we repurpose these sites to support modern-day supply chain logistics, Plans for the new bridge and hopefully for an expansion of the train tunnel to Canada will put us in the middle of major freight transfer operations, creating new opportunities along Wyoming and other parts of our city and along our eastern border. Can we actually turn waste that we produce every day into energy, lowering our treatment and utility costs? Well, a preliminary independent review that we commissioned identified opportunities and challenges. There was enough potential for the Detroit Water and Sewer Board to agree to share the cost of further analysis so that we could look at a pilot that might be replicated later in all kinds of changes in that department. And DTE, Ford Motor Company, and Severstal are supporting this effort. Can we use rooftops and parking lots to support solar farms to produce clean energy and generate revenue? Well, again, we've got DT on board and some private investors, and we're exploring that. Or allow live-works units in mixed-use units in traditionally in industrial properties. Can we be flexible for entrepreneurs so that we're creating opportunities and taking advantage of emerging development trends? We're already revising our master plan and looking at how we can do that, so that we can be welcoming to creative new ideas and new opportunities. In general, our region is overbuilt in retail based on the area's population and the new shopping venues, as well as the expansion of online services. So at some point throughout Michigan and the U.S., it appears that capacity will overtake demand. Well, we don't typically think of these things, but for the long term, we need to embrace the possibilities for new and potentially different investment in our retail areas. And in our residential areas, can we take actions now that will ensure modern, attractive homes in all of our neighborhoods that will have the same appeal that Dearborn has historically enjoyed? And we're already working on that, as I'll tell you. We're already engaged in transformative projects, understanding and embracing that these developments often require partnerships, patience, and the fortitude to see them through to success. For instance, for the last 6 years, the city and East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority have been in contact with ArtSpace, pursuing a project that could be a true catalyst for reinventing a mature business district. And this year, we will see the visible results when construction begins on a live work space and exhibit space here at City Hall. And that's going to give us new cultural attractions for customers, visitors, and residents. Where you sit today will be a performing center, where there'll be all kinds of performances, things that are going on in terms of the creative arts. And so we're really looking, and we know the history around the country. There's 34 of these in different major cities around the country. So this is an exciting project that I think you're all going to really appreciate once you get to see it and visit it. Our passenger rail station has deep roots in long-term vision to bolster our transportation options, create unique sense of place near our West Dearborn downtown, and draw more visitors and customers to Dearborn. Now, this project represents the power of visioning. Building this station at its present location was actually conceived and preliminary reviewed in 1999 as the perfect complement to the Henry Ford, the universities, our major employers, and West Dearborn Business District. Unfortunately, we didn't have the resources to make that vision a reality at that time. But in 2009, when a federal stimulus grant became available only for shovel-ready projects, we were prepared to take advantage of a long-desired opportunity. This summer, we will celebrate the opening of this landmark station. We have our eye on far horizons as we continue our neighborhood stabilization program, begun in 2007. Taking the necessary steps today to update our neighborhoods, like buying and demolishing troublesome homes, then offering the vacant land as side yard to create larger, more desirable parcels and off-street parking to really take out the congestion out of our neighborhoods. And talk about far, far horizons, this one, since 1960, more than 50 years ago, Dearborn systematically improved our aging neighborhoods through our Operation Eyesore program. At that time, the city reviewed every property in Dearborn and identified over 1,000 properties that were substandard. They were often garage homes that were converted into homes during the Depression, or properties that were built hastily because people were trying to find places for their families to live. So after they were identified, the city pursued those properties. They're still pursuing them today. We still have that program in place. So 1,300 properties have been bought at market price, have been torn down, and either new homes were built there in neighborhoods all over the city, or there were parks or other public uses made of them. And these single-family homes. So again, you talk about vision. That's really an example of the power of visioning. How many communities could say that much of their housing stock was torn down and replaced on a strategic basis? Okay. So our stable government has meant that we could shepherd major and successful initiatives like these through painstaking and often lengthy processes. I'll tell you sometime about the train station. But it gives us the confidence to think innovatively. These successes accomplished with the community's input. So now I'm seeking the input of the people committed to our community. I want to hear what they have to say about our future. The decision-making takes place when the public has the information to process and the elected leaders use their thoughtful recommendations as guidelines for advancing the good of the community. Now, 4 years ago, we asked 30 people from a broad spectrum of our community to work on a task force to develop what we called Vision 2016. It was a pathway out of the recession. We implemented most of those operational, cost-saving, and revenue-generating recommendations that were made by that task force. Now is the time to look further out, to make sure we're taking advantage of every opportunity and making decisions that are in our best long-term interests. So I'm forming another task force to take on this critical endeavor very soon. Creating a sustainable future takes engagement and hard work. But our special community certainly continues to deserve our best efforts. The task force will help us to define a vision and determine the roadmap to get there. Now, my goal is to put the city on a stronger financial footing than it is today. To do this, we have to ask ourselves, what do we want Dearborn to be? How do we want to use the resources that we have to our best advantage? How do we manage incremental changes? How do we marshal major transformations? These questions can be very scary or very exciting, depending on your perspective. For most of us, I think they're a little of both, but that's okay. We need to face reality with our eyes wide open, and we need to muster the courage to navigate from a comfortable and familiar course to newly discovered paths. Together, I know we can do this. As we do, we will remain committed to living our mission by providing superior services and earning your trust every day. Now, part of earning trust is being transparent. And I have to tell you that we have taken that characteristic to new heights. In fact, we now have 21 active social media accounts. Information about and from every major initiative is included on our website or shared in other ways. To that end, we're regularly posting, blogging, tweeting, chirping. We're broadcasting and doing every other thing that we can to give all of you access to our activities. I know tonight that I've seriously departed kind of from the typical State of the City address, and if there are people out there, the traditionalists, I apologize. However, if we're going to give ourselves the best chance at the brightest future, we can't look behind us. With our successes in mind, together we'll create a compelling vision that reflects our overall best interests. With your support and unwavering commitment to the community, truly like no other, I'm confident that we'll continue to make Dearborn a place for all of us to prosper. Thank you.
Okay, you've just been listening to the State of the City Address, rebroadcast from last Wednesday night here on WHFR when we carried it live. And you are listening to, and it was, of course, Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. And before that, at the beginning, we heard the tribute to Nancy Hubbard. It was actually the voice track or audio track of a videotape that was done to honor her. And the voice and the track was made available by Craig Schuler, who is the top audiovisual specialist for the city of Dearborn. It was his voice there, too, Craig Schuler. Great guy. Thanks, Craig. And the person who gave the award presentation to Nancy Hubbard, the female voice, was that of Debbie Dingell. You heard her mention John Dingell several times, John and I. And, of course, we do know now that just this morning, it's been totally confirmed, although everybody thought it was going to be definitely happening Wednesday night at the affair where she, you know, at the State of the City presentation when I talked to people. But she did confirm it publicly to the news media today that she is running for that representative seat now held by her husband, John Dingell. And so, as a Democrat, of course, yeah. And so that was her voice you heard giving the several awards and memorial from John Dingell to Nancy Hubbard after many years of service to Dearborn on the city council. I wanted to mention, too, if you were listening closely, and I don't know if there was a problem in Mayor O'Reilly's teleprompter on Wednesday night, but he misspoke on a little detail about fixing the potholes in Dearborn. And maybe, again, he did not misspeak. He just read the teleprompter. But in the printed speech, it specifically says that the Dearborn Department of Public Works has actually put out 50 tons of what they call cold patch to fill up the potholes on Dearborn-controlled streets. Now, I'm reminded that Michigan Avenue is not a Dearborn-controlled or a street that they have to take care of. That's a county street. So if there's a pothole on Michigan Avenue, you call Wayne County, okay? But in this case, what he said was 50 pounds. And everybody I know in the auditorium was turning their heads to each other, 50 pounds a week? That's nothing. That's a couple bags of sacks of potatoes, you know. I mean, 50 pounds, it's 50 tons, folks. They've already been, and I don't know for how long, but the potholes have become very noticeable in the last few weeks, I know. So 50 tons a week of what they call cold patch to fill them up, just at least temporarily anyway. I'm sure some of the streets are going to be in worse shape than that. So John Conroy is joining me, our WHFR staff member who helps on the journal. So how are the potholes downriver where you live, John, in Gros Isle?
Well, they are brutal. Mm. The worst patch that I've seen is directly off the north end of the island on Jefferson heading toward Wyandotte. But there's bad patches wherever you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really have to be careful. I hit one coming off the Southfield Expressway at Outer Drive, and that's been half patched. I'm thinking, that's only half a job. I could use a bad word there. But, you know, why did they only, maybe it settles or something after they put it in. They don't tamp it down, and cars driving over it sort of tamp it down. But it's a lot deeper than that. Believe me, I think my whole tire went into that hole before it came back out. And so it's still got 5 or 6 inches further before it's level with the street. So you got to be careful with your driving. You lose an axle, a tire, a hub, whatever. A lot of damage can still be caused. And it's going to get worse if it ever melts.
Well,
I know it's going to melt, but I just said if. I mean,
Discount tires and Bell tires are sure making a good number of repairs these days.
That's for sure. Back to the State of the City, just one more time here. You know, the show is being podcast. It's being archived on our website, whfr.fm, as a podcast. Just click on talk shows and then WHFR Journal and then select the date. And, of course, today is February the 28th. last day of February. Can spring be far behind? And the answer is probably yes, since we're going to get more snow and cold weather still. But I wanted to mention that at the City of Dearborn's website, which is cityofdearborn.org. Right. Somebody already bought dearborn.org, so they couldn't have that one. Oh. I think it's a porn site or something. But cityofdearborn.org, you'll see two things. Yes, you can get a copy of the State of the City address that you just heard with 50 tons written in, not 50 good. Pounds. Yes. Yeah. But there's also there what the mayor said. You know, this is not sort of not the traditional speech. It's because he also did a 24-page State of the City fact sheet, which we have a copy of here, which goes into extreme detail about what was done over the last year. I mean, dollars and cents and personnel on all the topics that you know and love about Dearborn. And that's most of that is usually included in the State of the City speech, but he didn't include any of that. But it's a separate document, and if you really want to look and see what the city has done and why, specifically, then you'd want to go to the State of the City fact sheet, and it says 2014, because that's when they have provided it. But it's really for the last year up to the State of the City address, okay? So go take a look at that. I also want to mention in regard to the State of the City address, and Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr., he has agreed to be on our Radiothon Week show here on WHFR, our Pledge Week. He will have the whole hour with myself and John or Dennis or whatever staff wants to come in to ask the questions. And he will be, of course, responding to questions from us about the last year in Dearborn and the future. And I've got a lot of good ones I've been saving up for him. But that's the whole hour on April the 11th, Friday, from 1 to 2 p.m., special full hour with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. on our WHFR Journal show. If you want to email questions to me, I'll be mentioning this each week from now on, you can just use our regular email at WHFR, which is WHFR@hfcc.edu. Just that simple. And put in there questions for Jay or for the journal or for the mayor, questions for the mayor, and it'll get routed to me within a day or so. All right? So we look forward to having him here and asking the hard questions. And the details are all there. So once you read the city fact sheet, and maybe listen again to the State of the City address on our podcast, I'm sure you'll have a few very, very good questions that you want to make sure that we ask. So be sure to email them to us, whfr@hfcc.edu. Okay, I just want to do a little tribute here. Mayor O'Reilly did a tribute, besides Nancy Hubbard, also to the Dearborn Department of Public Works, and I just want to reflect on the great service of our United States Postal Service, USPS, okay? The post office people, the carriers. I live in the east side of Dearborn, and at least in my neighborhood, no matter how bad the weather was, Monday through Saturday, I got mail delivery every day. Every single day. And these people have covered up just about every part of exposed skin. I don't know how they can see where they're walking, because this is bitter cold, folks. This is freezing, freezing cold. And each of their routes takes them several hours to walk. And you say, well, they just walk faster. Not on the ice and snow. You've got to be very careful. I'm sure many of them have fallen, in fact, and in the line of duty, and had to pick themselves up or might have been injured even. This is dangerous out there, too, for them. I don't think they get hazard pay, like, or battle pay, you know, like in days like this, but they should. And I would just want to thank the United States Postal Service and the Dearborn Post Office and all the carriers for the great service, at least to me. I don't know about other neighborhoods, but realize they're out there every day, except Sunday, delivering the mail to us, and sometimes it's extremely challenging, as it has been here in Michigan for the last several months.
And echoing that, not only do they deliver it to the mailboxes, but when the packages are too large, they will still come right to your door. and drop them off. And here's a shout out to try to make the areas in front of the mailboxes a little more passable and doable. People should definitely shovel and plow out their mailboxes so that people can so the post office can put their mail into the place into the mailboxes. Yeah,
it's technically required in Dearborn for residences to shovel their sidewalks. To clear the sidewalks, but it, you know, in this weather, you can't always get it down to the concrete. I mean, you shovel, but there's still that layer of ice and snow, and then it's hard to find any more rock salt. I mean, even if you wanted to buy some, there, a lot of the stores say, "Yeah, we ran out, but we're not ordering more." I mean, it's going to get warm soon. Yeah, well, when, you know, thanks a lot. But so, I mean, you can't blame a lot of people for not putting adequate rock salt out now because there just isn't any easily or you know bought anymore. And just to make you feel really bad about the weather, a couple days ago, a the prominent National Weather Service meteorologist, Barbara Mays Busted, she has come up with what's called a misery index for the weather. And in her analysis, based on cold temperatures and also amount of snowfall, found that Detroit is in the middle of its harshest winter since 1950. Detroit has had 6.5 feet of snow so far this winter and 100 days of below freezing temperatures. Now, this came out earlier this week, so it's more than 100 days now. Okay, it's I think it's been below zero for the last couple days even. The summary thesis is no major city in the United States has been hit harder this winter than Detroit, according to this misery index, which puts cold temperatures and snowfall together. So, aren't we glad we live in Detroit? Okay. All right. Moving on, the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 28th, continues with John and Jay. Let's see, Dearborn Press and Guide, because what are we? We're local news and alternative views very often. Let's see, anything interesting? There was a representative from, I think, Downriver, Representative Rashida Tlaib. She had a little tax error and says she'll take full responsibility and will repay the money. Apparently, they were getting homestead credit on two houses. And you're only supposed to do that on one. You know, where you're living. And the other one was a rental property. And, well, of course, she blamed it on her tax accountant. Right, tax accountants, how could they know the difference? You know, how could they know the tax rules? In fact, even the story, which is in the Press and Guide last Sunday, which it just makes me doubt everybody, and besides the representative and her accountant and their veracity, they say this is a very common error. Right. You have rental property and you deduct full taxes for that and your place of residence. When it clearly says, you know, if you use like TurboTax or something, only one place.
Right.
Only your main residence can you deduct. But they're not using TurboTax because that would prevent you from doing two. I'm sure of it. You know, they cross-check and the computer so this is a common error. Give me a break. Of course, our tax system, don't get me started. I'll get started after April 15th, and we'll do our special tax show here on the Journal. Our tax system is way too complicated. It's even a college graduate, like the representative, who I think is a college graduate, although she doesn't sound like one at times, but I'm sorry. Remember, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay, just so you're clear about that. Nonetheless, I'm a college graduate. And I use TurboTax. I'm not recommending that necessarily. It's kind of expensive. There's some other cheaper software programs out there. In fact, my my local credit union, DFCU, that if you it's a plug for them now. Oh, I can't get away from these commercials. Anyway, they were offering, although not until the last minute here, TurboTax for free, that to their customers.
Oh,
that I don't know how they provide the software. They give you the disk, or I don't know. But I'm just saying there's many tax programs to assist you. Why do we need that? Why do we need this? You know, and why do we need people that could cheat? Why do we need to give them the possibility of that? We need to have a different tax system that is easier, can be figured out by everyone, including high school graduate only. Okay, and it's just got to change. And of course, on this show, we've had people from the fair tax proposal several times, and I think it's a great idea. And it completely does away with, get this, income tax. It does away with withholding from your paycheck. But it charges you about 28% on everything you buy.
Wow.
Talk about tax, huh?
That's 28%, that's a number.
But you understand there's about a third of your check you never even see because they take it out for withholding.
Because of those withholding taxes.
And right. Then with no income tax, that means you definitely don't have to pay any income tax. Of course, some people get something back at tax time. They get a rebate.
Right.
Or not a rebate, just a refund.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, going through this terrible psychological hassle and keeping all these pieces of paper and documents and so on, the fair tax proposal, I'll finish this now that I started it. Yes, it's 28% tax on everything you buy. Everything you buy. House, cars, everything. Okay? But, you say, what about the poor people? Because that would be onerous if you were lower income.
28%.
How can you afford food anymore? You know, if you have five people in your family, one of them is not going to eat. You know, what? 28%. But what they come up with is what they call a prebate. It is a check from the federal government in this case. If they don't have the federal income tax, the fair tax, besides adding that 28% on everything you buy, they will give everybody, rich and poor, the amount of money that's appropriate for their household per person that would bring them up. Assuming they spent up to poverty level, whatever it is now, $30,000 a year for a family of four. Well, what's 28% of that? Well, you'd get that prebate check monthly from the government to pay you or even the rich people. I don't think they should send it to the rich people. But nonetheless, everybody would get that prebate check based on how many people are in their family that would actually return to you the amount of money you spend up to the poverty level on the essentials. And most people in these lower income levels, most of the money goes to food, clothing, and housing. Because they got to spend that first, right? And they don't have much left over. So the prebate checks would take care of every month you get a check in the mail. So you not only get the full paycheck with no withholding for every time you work and get that check in the mail, but then you also get the prebate checks, which will certainly compensate for the 28% tax for people in the lower income levels. So I think it's a fantastic idea. We could even replace the state of Michigan income tax with a state of Michigan fair tax if we wanted to. Have we done that? No. It's too radical. It's crazy. This has been checked and double-checked for 20 years by economists at big universities. This would work. So if you really hate the federal government income tax, as I do, and the way, the complexity and the stupidity and all the loopholes and all the special deductions, there are answers. And you should encourage every representative now and after tax day, too, to find better answers. Now, this consumption tax, if you will, the fair tax of consumption, the more you consume, the more you buy, the more you're paying, right, in taxes. It is a graduated tax, therefore, assuming that the people with more money do more buying.
There you go.
So when they buy a $10 million house, well, they got to pay 28% tax on that house, whereas someone in the lower economic levels, and they buy a $100,000 house, they pay 28%, but it's a lot fewer dollars. So it is a graduated tax. If you love that, if you do say that rich people should pay more money, then you could. And there's no loopholes, no special deductions. In fact, I have with me here, and this is, I'm sorry, John, but
that's okay.
We talked before the show about the stories we're going to do in the last half hour.
That always changes. That's okay.
But I get regularly information from The Mackinac Center for Public Policy here in Michigan, they're a think tank which always thinks conservative. They don't say they do, but they always do. And one of their publications is called CapCon, okay? And the editorials, and I always love to read a variety of rationales for different points of view, you know, at length. And this is like a four-page document from Michael Lefebvre, who is the head of the Mackinac Center for, or Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And this is the editorial headline, Trim Corporate Welfare to $0. Now, he's not talking about taxes here, but he is talking about special incentive programs that the state of Michigan gives to certain businesses. Now, of course, he's not in favor of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation of giving money for new ecology projects. You know, he doesn't like that idea of incentive money going out. You think that's badly spent. But if he's against corporate welfare, then he should be against corporate tax breaks, too. Okay? And I just wonder if he is. I know he isn't. I don't think he is, anyway. But Michigan Film Office, there's an arts and cultural program, almost $8 million in Michigan. The film, of course, he doesn't want pure Michigan. You like that ad campaign? Yeah. I don't know how much it's outstate. I mean, the idea is to get tourists here outside Michigan.
Bring them in.
Right. But the budget for this year is $29 million. Mm-hmm. So it's not just making those new license plates that say Pure Michigan on them. It's the TV production of TV commercials or public service announcements. And when they place them, though, outside of Michigan, they have to pay for it like a commercial. So
big billboards also.
I would, yeah, and I would guess over half of that is for placement money, in other words, to get it played on TV stations elsewhere. Maybe there's a radio version too. Mm-hmm. Haven't heard that, but so, you know, anything to help tourism in Michigan, is it working or not? Is that money working? Well, Michael Lefebvre says no. Okay. Job creation services, $24 million. And he thinks that's ridiculous. Also, he is not in favor even of $2 million for the Grand Rapids Public Museum. That's not the Gerald R. Ford Museum. That's a separate one. But that's in Grand Rapids also. But, okay. But the Grand Rapids Public Museum, he doesn't think they should get any money. He doesn't want to do any job training for the Chaldean Community Foundation. So he's not for job creation services in general. Well, thanks a lot. All the people out of work, thank you, Mr. Lefebvre, for that nod to their continued suffering. But the Michigan Film Incentive Program to bring motion pictures in Michigan is $50 million right now.
Wow.
And that's what the governor wanted, a little more money for that. Now, of course, when they come in to make movies, they do spend a lot of money when they come into the state to make a feature film. Are we really getting back that $50 million? I don't know. But I agree with the headline anyway, trim corporate welfare to $0, and even tax loopholes should be $0 of loopholes for business and industry, and for other people too. Everybody should pay the same taxes. Business tax levels, we can debate what they should be compared to individual tax levels, but forget about the special incentives and the loopholes. I kind of agree with that. Well, okay. Moving on. A couple good things about Henry Ford Community College, and they don't force us to say this, folks, even though we're here at the college and they pay for the lights and the heat and so on for WHFR. And we are a sponsored activity. They, not out of the general fund, but from the student fees, we get the same portion as the theater program, the same amount as the music programs that do outreach, so-called, to the community. Okay. So nothing special about that, and it's not from any sort of the general budget, okay? It's just from a percent of those students who come here that want to support student activities. And, of course, the big one is the sports teams, the men's and women's basketball. That takes over $200,000 a year, and we're just a small, little teeny amount of that compared to that, and so is music and newspaper and campus newspaper and the theater program, just a small little portion compared to sports. But it's all from, you might say, user fees, student activity fees. And, of course, generous contributions from our listeners. And we'll be getting to that more, because April 6th through 12th is our pledge week, our once a year, only once a year. We need to have you consider giving us a general donation. Now, if you already have through our website, which is available 24/7 all year round, then thank you very much. Okay. But the two good things about the college, one is there's a pilot program. It's a hands-on approach in engineering and science, and we're taking it to the schools. We're taking it to the high schools in Dearborn.
Sure.
I think that's great. That's on page 11A from last Sunday's Press and Guide. And a number of our students here have written papers, like research papers and essays, and they've earned awards, top awards in what's called the LAND. And that's a liberal arts something or other. It's on page 13A of this Wednesday's Press and Guide. And they really swept the, I think there were four of the top six or seven papers done by students at colleges in Michigan that were written by our students. Of course, we've got that. We still got that honors college, too. So we've got some pretty bright people here at Henry Ford Community College. But congratulations to them. And let's see, other student news from Dearborn Public High Schools. They have a program of for special art students. And it's perceptions of popular perception something. They create works, public works of art. And yes, throughout Dearborn now, there's some statues and other things that have been produced by them, and they're sometimes renewed every couple of years. Well, they just got a great tour of the new intermodal station. We call it the train station in West Dearborn. They're probably getting ideas already for where the public areas, the common areas will be, and what kind of statues and artistic works would be appropriate there. And of course, the good thing about their work is it's free. And they're learning by doing. They're understanding the constraints and the necessities of art in a public place. Kind of nice. But
yes,
I'd like a tour of that station, although it's freezing cold out there right now. I don't think they have the walls all the way up that they have turned the heat on yet either. So.
Not yet, no.
Okay. Let's see what else is going on here. Well, of course, yeah, we already mentioned that John Dingell is retiring and Debbie is going to run. Okay, that's good. I'm looking down my list here. What's the Downriver story, John? There's a cinema, I think it's MJR or something like that. I don't want to give a commercial here. Nope. In Southgate area, that is now got a liquor license approved.
They just got that approved, and it's timely because of the Oscar show that's going to happen very soon as well.
Oh, so you can go in and drink like crazy as you're watching the award ceremony. A lot of these theaters, they have the video feeds that they can bring in on special events like that, too.
Certainly.
I'm not sure if they will.
There's good, you know, good food to be catered as well, and drinks to be had. You know.
Yeah, the food would be good. That will ameliorate the liquor effect, I think.
Lower the cost. Yeah.
But maybe lower the cost. I don't know. This has happened all throughout Europe for decades, folks. As you go into a European movie theater, whether it's in Paris or in Germany or whatever, and they sometimes have a little cart that they go up and down the aisles with, mm-hmm. and you can buy alcoholic beverages, soft drinks, snacks, whatever, from that cart. My favorite restaurant, movie theater, is in Austin, Texas. There's a number of theaters there that are run by the same organization, and only in Austin right now, but they actually have an extremely large desk in front of each aisle of seats, and just enough room for wait persons to walk those aisles even during the movie. And so you got big menus, you get pizza, whatever, and you can eat your whole dinner there while you're watching the movie.
Oh.
And they serve you even during it. Of course, the wait persons sort of duck down if the movie is on and you're watching as they run over to you. Most people order before the movie starts. But they have alcoholic beverage service there, too. And it's extremely popular in Austin, especially with people who are just getting out of work in downtown Austin. And before they go home, they can get dinner and watch a movie at the same time.
I bet there's no additional fees for putting your coat in the rack either.
No. And the food is reasonable. The admission price of the theater is the same as any other theater, so it doesn't save on that. But the food is very good, too, I will say. So I'm all in favor of that, although liquor by itself, no. But if they serve other food, I think that's a good idea. I mean, they can't not serve popcorn, certainly.
No.
Oh, okay.
Gotta have that.
Beer and popcorn. What a combo.
What a combo.
Yeah. Don't have any comment about Robert Fracano's speech. He's, you know, the current CEO of Wayne County. He has not officially said he's going to run again. But his speech last Tuesday here in Dearborn, his State of the County speech, he said, "I'm a fighter. We're going to fight. We need to fight." 18 times he mentioned this fighting metaphor. So it sure sounds like he's getting his courage up to run again. But an awful lot of people with prominent names have indicated they might be running against him in the primary. So we'll see what happens with that. Just a couple minutes now, and we get to the Highway 61 show with Joanne Korchinska. And hope you stay tuned for that. The Best in the Blues for 4 hours this afternoon from 2 to 6. Great guest editorial in the Dearborn Times-Herald from this last Wednesday from the Battle Creek Inquirer, actually. Their editorial is, "Forget Math and School Funding Debate. Our schools need more money." Okay? Are they really getting an increase? No. It's been a decrease for years. I know it's a little more this year than last year, according to our governor. But don't think that he's the education governor. That is absolutely wrong, and the facts are there. In this, you know, Times Herald, you think of as a relatively conservative paper, and I don't know about the Battle Creek Inquirer, but the facts are, from the real research over the last 20, 30 years, that education is hurting in Michigan. We do not fund the schools adequately compared to almost any other state in the United States, and that's part of the reason why we can't do other things. So read that. And study that closely. A couple of events this weekend. Tomorrow night is the big HFCC concert. And in fact, even Mayor O'Reilly, if you're listening close to his speech, he gave a big plug for that. He said, "It's the best single concert. Oh, all this entertainment going on." And it's a contribution to scholarship funds here at Henry Ford Community College. That's tomorrow night. I think doors open at 7. Can't remember the cost. It's probably $20-$30, something like that, for a ticket per person, because it's a benefit. Probably deducted on your income tax. That's tomorrow night, March 1st, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And Sunday, Women's Expo from 10 to 5. A lot of private vendors there. Fun will be had by all, especially women. And that's also at the center. The reason I mention it, there's a $3 cost to get in. But all the proceeds go to a leukemia organization, an organization fighting leukemia. And so, in a way, it's a nonprofit contribution you're making when you go in the door, at least. Okay, let's see. Podcast going to be cutting off now. I think we did a pretty good summary here. We'll get more included on next week's WHFR Journal. Anything finally, John?
No, thank you very much, Jay. Good to be back on the air. I just asked who's performing tomorrow night, Saturday night at the show?
Well, it's just about everybody that performs here at the college. So okay. Our music department, theater department, they've got all the bands and the singing groups out and all the instructors. So it's about 150 different performers doing all kinds of music that everybody will enjoy, and you know, instrumental music as well as singing. And maybe even some dancing, too.
Sounds like a great night.
It always is. And Mayor O'Reilly, I couldn't believe the plug he gave.